Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half an hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can send emails to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Good afternoon. Good to see you, as always.
Hi, Stan. How are you today?
Pretty good, thanks. I wanted to ask first about, we've gotten our first snow flurries of the season, and I wanted to ask how your city is prepped in terms of having salt and overtime pay for plow drivers and equipment ready to go. Are you all set? Do you have enough for whatever you think you're going to need?
Yeah, we're in good shape. We have most of the trucks put together for snow. We still have a few that we don't, but we're using those still for leaves. Lots of leaves, it seemed like, this year.
Yeah.
But the trucks are ready. The drivers are ready. The routes have all been updated. We've looked at what we're going to do this year in certain areas that can sometimes be problematic. And we had a big meeting just last week of all the department heads who have employees that plow in my office, and went over all the routes, the assignments, made sure we're all on the same page. We have plenty of salt. We didn't even use all of our salt allocation from last year. So we have plenty of salt. We have that stored in a couple different places. So we're in good shape, and we just like to caution everybody when we do get that first snow that that's always a tough one for folks with the driving, and just to be careful and to really slow down, and that will help all of us and certainly keep the city safer. So, yep, we're in good shape. Plenty of overtime money. You ask about that. There's always plenty of that in the budget. And as you know, the city of Lafayette participates in a fuel hedge fund through the Indiana Bond Bank. And so our fuel prices are locked in with collars. And so from a gasoline standpoint and all that, we're just in fantastic shape.
Let's get to a question that has come in from one of our listeners since you were last on the show. Erin has written in, and she wants to know about the proposed low-income housing project that you and other city leaders had been talking about on the south side. You'd had some issues with it. The developers then kind of just moved to another location that didn't require rezoning. And so Erin says this, and I'm quoting now. She says, will the building project happen? Was it rejected? And if it wasn't rejected, is there anything local citizens can do to fight this? She says, I have no issues with having a diverse community with all income levels, but anyone who lives, works, or volunteers in Lafayette can tell you we do not have the resources to support or sustain another low-income housing project in our community. Your thoughts on her statement?
Well, her statement's exactly correct, and we certainly I appreciate those comments and the way that she is looking at the situation, because she's absolutely right. You know, our community, this could be a whole show on its own, but our community has been very welcoming, very accepting. We have done low-income tax credits projects in the past where I have supported them for housing, for senior housing, assisted living. All different types, all the way back to Chatham Square, which is probably the shining example of a project that just went really, really well when we got rid of the old Bridgeway apartment. So our community has been very receptive. But with that being said, unfortunately, you know, we have made it clear that there is a capacity limit, there is a resource limit, and also there is a way of doing these projects. So when you look at Chatham Square, when you look at Glasswater Creek, when you look at other projects that we have supported, and the project we're supporting with Real America, there was this sense of collaboration where literally on some of those projects, 2 years where we met with people and put together services and looked for opportunities and jobs and child care and bus lines and all of those things that we think make a successful project, but also move people to self-sufficiency, because that's the long-term goal. In my mind, you just don't throw up housing. The goal is to help stabilize people through housing, but move them to self-sufficiency where they don't need that government assistance any longer. And that should be the long-term goal. And, you know, on this particular project, as you said, they came to me. I told them this was not a good project, not a good time, not a good location, and I wouldn't support the rezoning. And they simply, as again you indicated, found a spot that was already zoned. And so I have exhausted every resource. I have sent letters to the Indiana Housing Community Development Authority, to every state rep we have, state senator, to our federal officers from Rokita, to Senator Donnelly, to Senator Young. I have spoke with people at the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority. I have spoke with their executive director. I sent a certified letter last week to the governor and the lieutenant governor asking them to intervene because this project does not have any of those components. It's not in a good location. We don't want it here. I've made that clear. I've sent a formal letter. The city council sent a formal letter. The Board of Works has sent a formal letter. Citizens have sent letters. They've sent in petitions. I've spent, I cannot tell you how many hours I have spent on this trying to get this project stopped. At this point, it's still going forward, and here's what we found out. Back in 2016, the IRS and the Government Office of Accounting put out some rulings and directives that basically took away all local control. You know, it used to be that if I wasn't for a project and I didn't give it any points on a scale, it pretty much died. And but like I said, we didn't do that with all of them. There were ones we approved. But I guess in some parts of the country, places, and I guess there was a big lawsuit in Maryland, there were places that wouldn't take any of them. And so this new ruling came out about removing local control, and, you know, my objections could no longer stop a project or local elected officials' objections. Basically, they took that away at the federal level. And so the Indiana Housing Community Development Authority is afraid that, you know, with that directive, that they can get themselves in trouble or sued like Maryland did. But, you know, I've sent a letter to the governor saying, you know, this is absolutely the worst example of big government, you know, pounding down on a local community, and a local community that hasn't said no to everything. In fact, has been open to helping people. But now when there's one we're concerned about, all of a sudden we don't have any local control or any say in the matter. It basically boils down to if they can check the box that it's zoned appropriately, there's water and sewer to the location, and it doesn't put too many low-income people in a certain geographical area, and there's a formula to use, it's basically an automatic, which is just absolutely ridiculous, because that is not the way to have a successful project. And I don't think just throwing up housing moves people towards self-sufficiency. And I think when we look at these programs, we should always be looking at how do we help stabilize people and how do we move them to self-sufficiency so they don't need government assistance for their entire life. And so literally, I spent hundreds of hours trying to get this stopped. Right now, it ended up not being on the agenda in November. It's not on the agenda right now in December. So we're looking at January. But the company itself has submitted plans to the City of Lafayette offices, to the engineering offices. They're continuing to move forward with it, which, you know, in my mind says they probably think it's a slam dunk because of the ridiculous process and removing local control, that you just check three boxes and you can get federal tax credits, and they're looking to get a bond. I think that's a waste of taxpayers' money. And in the letter to the governor, I said, you know, I understand you may not be able to control all this, but I ask him to partner with me in sending a message that this is not the way to do these projects. It's not good for the people. It's not good for Indiana. It's a waste of taxpayers' money and for the whole country, and call on our federal folks to reexamine this and to ask the IRS and the Government Office of Accounting to relook at this and come up with a common sense, practical approach. And if you have communities that say no to everything, figure out a way to deal with them, but not punish all of us that do things right and do things thoughtful and have done these projects. So
your community has something like 800 people on the waiting list for the Lafayette Housing Authority looking for housing vouchers. Those are people who have signified in some way, hey, look, we could use a little bit of help with paying for our housing. How do you satisfy that demand and try to make sure that you do have enough affordable housing for the people who need that kind of help in your community?
Well, you know, that we keep that list open, and I've talked to Michelle about closing that list because that creates kind of an inaccurate perception. We have people applying that have just moved here. They stay here just long enough to get residency. They get a voucher, and we're even tracking that they're leaving with those vouchers and taking them back other places. So that list, in my mind, is not a good indicator of whether we have what the level of need is for me personally. But the other part is, I mean, I think it was Erin. She's exactly right. I mean, you know, we just finished a successful United Way campaign. The Red Kettle campaign, I heard, is a little bit down. We're working on a couple other projects. One of them is through Real America, where we're going to put, it's only about 40-some units. Totally different, you know, computer labs, green infrastructure. They wanted to work with me about getting city cars that we're getting rid of because they're old and giving them to them to help with transportation. They want to work with Ivy Tech. They're looking at it's a totally different, you know, different mindset. And so that one I'm actually supporting. And so we're not saying that we wouldn't support any anymore, but we want to be careful because there are, I mean.
Well, that sounds like a significant increase in the available investment, though. I mean, the one you were just describing sounds like it would take a fair amount more time, a fair amount more money. I mean, but people need roofs over their heads. I mean, we're talking about harsh winters that we're about to get into. And so how do you balance that?
Well, those people that, like, if you're comparing that to the point in time count to the people living along the Wabash River, they're not going to qualify. I mean, you don't move into this new development for free.
No.
You got to pay rent. It's on a scale and based on 60% of the average median income and some things like that. So it's not, you know, the homeless people, the numbers are actually down. The city of Lafayette houses 26 of those in Shelter Plus Care. We actually have vouchers for veterans. We have four of them open right now that we can't find people to even use. And so, you know, and again, I know there's going to be people that are going to be upset or they're going to make the same argument that you're making there, but that's not really reality. And the bottom line is, you know, a lot of people, some people want to argue this with me, a lot of people move in here from other places because of the amount of services that we have. This is just the truth. And I've always tried to, any community only has a finite amount of capacity. And there is a time when you're past that capacity. And we need to do these things right. We have lots of jobs. We got to get people with the skills to do those jobs. And that's why a project like Real America is attacking that also. So we're actually moving, you know.
So it sounds like you're saying someone needs to come to you with more than just a building. They need to come to you with a more comprehensive plan.
Exactly.
Okay.
And 240 units is a big complex. It is literally within a stone's throw of Romney Meadows, which is the old claystone, which, you know, we've been working on for the last 2 or 3 years to finally get which was our highest crime rate area in the city, to finally get that down. And we've made improvements. And I supported the tax credits for that to redo that project and work with a new owner who worked with me for almost a year and a half to put a plan together. And that's working. And so we have been open to that, but not just throwing stuff up. I mean, and people think, I think I'm a very kind, compassionate person, but there's got to be some practical common sense put to this, and there's got to be long-term vision, long-term planning. That's the only way to make it sustainable, and it's the only way, I think, to truly help move people to self-sufficiency.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have more of your questions. Call 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your question at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to talk about training that your fire department and the West Lafayette Fire Department have been doing together. And I saw an indication that it might have been one of the first times, if not the first time, this has happened. That seemed a little odd to me.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that assessment. But the bottom line is that ice has been broken. But yes, in the past, the Lafayette Fire Department would train its recruits, run its fire academy. The West Lafayette Fire Department would do their own, and we didn't do them together, and we didn't do them at the same time. And here in this last class, for the first time, Chief Doyle and Chief Heath got together, and their training departments got together. And, you know, I know it does seem odd because Lafayette and West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, we work together, plan together. We have a joint purchasing board. I mean, you just name it over and over, our police department's drug task force. But this was just a piece of that puzzle that had never got done before. And so this last class was joint between Lafayette and West Lafayette Fire.
Do you have any sense of what was holding it up all those years?
You know, I just don't. I really don't, because Chief Doyle's been in his position for a while and Chief Heath's been in. But they're the two right people at the right time that got it done. And I think it's going to be marvelous. I think you'll see it expand and go forward doing that in the future. And I think it's going to be good for both departments, both cities. Helps with cross-training and just a lot of advantages to it. So it was a while. Took a while to get here, but it's here, and I'm glad that it is.
We've been hearing from a number of store owners along Main Street in your downtown, which you've just spent about $5 million redoing over the last couple of years. And since the completion of that streetscape project, some of the business owners have said that flooding has become a concern for them. How have you been working with them on that?
Well, you know, we just met again, and I'll be honest with you, the copy shop, a print shop I was well aware of, the two up on Upper Main, I wasn't aware that they were having an issue till actually I saw that in the newspaper. So we've looked at how we're going to try, and we're going to get it fixed, but it's not an easy fix. So we're going to have to go upstream a little bit further than we up Main Street. Upstream's what they say in that world, but we're going to go up Main Street a little further and do some work. We're going to have to design it a few, because there's so many fiber optic lines and everything buried in the roads down there, where we need to put a couple outlets and drains and things would probably help. Probably not going to be able to put them in without relocating a significant amount of underground infrastructure, which is incredibly expensive. And we didn't, you know, relocate it during that first project because just tremendous, tremendous cost. So I feel confident that we can get that fixed. I have made my staff know and the engineering firms. I met with them about 2 weeks ago in my office, and I have made it very clear to them that this is a high priority for me to find these solutions, get that fixed. Part of it, I think we're going to be able to fix relatively easy on Upper Main, not the whole problem, but looking at the installation of the sidewalks, after they went up there and looked at that much closer, the elevations on those sidewalks and where that's crowned, it doesn't appear that it was built correctly. And I don't want to say where that problem lies, if it was the people that drew it or the people that put it in. We haven't researched it. We haven't quite got to that point. But I think we can take some of that out, redo it, shift the elevation on that just enough to change the flow of that water as it comes up the handicap ramp, hits that sidewalk area, to actually move that away from the buildings and to the street. And that'll take care of some of it. That wouldn't take care of all of it, like, you know, the rain we had about a month or so ago that was just unbelievable amount of rain, but that would be a start. So we're absolutely committed to get that correct. You know, we're thrilled with streetscape. Downtown looks great. I talked to a lot of business owners, people coming downtown. Things are going very well, but the bottom line is we need to get that corrected for those business owners, and they
so
have
you
my
and I actually will. Talked a little bit about this during the summer when there were a couple of really heavy rains and there was some flooding in the downtown streets as you were nearing the very end of the streetscape project. You said at the time you didn't think that there were any additional problems that had been created by that. I remember we had somebody who had called in and asked that. Do you now think you need to go back and reevaluate where these perhaps unintended consequences or hidden problems might be based on everything now being in?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, there's a couple different things. One, there was some very significant rain. So when the water comes down the Main Street hill and it's raining hard enough, because that sidewalk, those storefronts used to have a lip on them before, you know, you'd step up to go into the
sure.
store. Because they always, they said, after I looked at it, they would get a little bit of water even before this. But now, if it rained hard enough, but now it's considerably more. Well, that lip is considerably gone because of the outdoor seating area at the East End Grill that butts up against those other two businesses. And then with the crowning and the elevation off just a little bit, it's made that worse. So I think on that, we'll have to look at some of the how do we actually redirect that flow. And that's one of the things we're studying. It looks like we might be able to go down 11th Street over to Ferry. We might be able to intercept some of that flow upstream a little bit and actually take that over to Ferry Street, which helps everything, you know, downstream. And then down there at the print shop, you know, part of that is we created a pretty big island there for people to stand and gathering spots like we talked about right across the street from a significant piece of public art that people are enjoying. But that does slow that water down, and it has to work itself around that curb. So we're going to have to take some of that water before it gets to that chicane or that bump out, and then help that water move around it. So there's solutions. It's just a matter of engineering it and getting it done.
Lafayette Mayor Tony Razborski is our guest today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Call in your questions in our last 10 minutes or so. 496-1999 is the telephone number. Send emails to ask@WBAA.org or tweet those questions at WBAA News on Twitter. The county commissioners, of course, have extended the county's syringe exchange program for another year. And a number of the comments echoed actually something you have said on this program, which is that you're unhappy with its location in the Centennial neighborhood in downtown Lafayette or just north of downtown. Do you think that the fact that the commissioners hit upon that and that there were a number of comments about that actually gives you a way to maybe be able to support this in the future if it can be moved? Because this is something even the county health officer, Jeremy Adler, has said, look, we just put it here because we kind of had to. We're not crazy about the location. And there have been suggestions of moving it to a local hospital or something like that. Would moving it out of that neighborhood give you the ability to support it for the next year as they try to gather some more data to say, hey, here are some hard numbers on what it's actually doing?
Well, probably for the 100th time, and you've asked me a lot. I mean, I think my position on the needle exchange has not changed. I think I've been very consistent. I understand the issue regarding Hep C and HIV and the reason why the needle exchange is felt to need to be put in place to help, you know, combat that. That I recognize. As I've said in the past, I don't think it's going to play a significant factor in the opioid crisis. I think, you know, the medicated assistant treatment facility, I think, is going to play a much larger role. I get the health emergency on the Hep C and the HIV. I don't like the way the program is structured, that there is so little accountability for the people that are involved in the program. You can't make them go to counseling. You can only refer them. There's no way to, if they even say they went, that you can really follow up on that. I have stressed very vehemently that I want this to be as close to a one-to-one exchange as possible. We're not there yet, but we're getting closer. But there's still a lot of needles out there. I've made it clear I want tight parameters, tight policies, as close to one-to-one exchange as policy. Even though I understand the reason, I struggle, and which I think most citizens do. I've talked to them about it, with the entire drug kit being part of it, where you actually get a tourniquet, you get a little thing to heat it up. I struggle with it being a entire drug kit. I get the needle part, I'm sure the reasoning is, well, that could be contaminated too. But I'm not sure when people are under the influence of narcotics and, you know, how well that all works. So I understand it. I've said I support it from the Hep C, the HIV. And my biggest concern is it can't be in a location that harms neighborhoods. I mean, I have to look out for the welfare and good of all people in the community. And I fought very hard not to have it in a couple places that I thought was inappropriate. I do have a couple locations, if we could get it moved there, that I would support. I've been clear about that, and we're certainly still working on that. So
let me ask you this. What the commissioner said is, when you come back to us a year from now, we want a lot more data than you've got right now. That was their marching orders to Jeremy Adler. What kind of data, if any, are you looking for? What do you want to see from the point of view of just your city, which hosts this thing, a year from now? Are there specific numbers you're going to be looking at? Are there specific benchmarks you want to have met? What are your criteria?
Well, I mean, I know that programs like that take some time to be effective. But, I mean, ultimately, you would like to see the number of HIV cases, hep C cases decreasing, that you would hope that it really would minimize the spread of that. I think I would like to see the continual restrictions on making sure the needle is closer to a one-to-one exchange. And if there are people abusing the program or consistently coming back with a lot less than they're given, then I think we've got to do things. I would like to see the state government take a look at the program itself and say, is it really fair that that can be put somewhere inside a city's jurisdiction without the mayor or the city council having any say in that process or that location? So, you know, it's things like that I'd like to see, and then how it collaborates with other programs, and maybe some additional accountability through the state put in there so it really becomes, you know, a viable program. I struggle with programs, I'll just be totally honest, that just give things away with very little accountability put behind them to try to, because I really want to help people. I want to do things that make a significant difference in people's lives. And sometimes that's tough. And sometimes you got to do the hard things, and you've got to push them to do the hard things to make that difference, to really get people well, really get people into counseling for the opioids. And like I said, that's why I have supported the medicated assisted clinic that will be coming here, because there are parameters and guidelines, and you have to be under a doctor's care, and you have to, you know, go to counseling, and you have to come in daily to get that dose, unless you're on the program maybe long enough, and there is a way that may be waived a little bit, but it's still a small window. I think those kind of things help build that accountability, build that structure into people's lives, that help them overcome what's a terrible problem. I understand it. So it's a lot of pieces, the moving puzzle, but I think I've been very consistent on what my position is.
In a related note, just in our last 90 seconds or so, I noticed where some 90 of your police officers are now carrying naloxone, the overdose antidote, with them. This is something that a number of cities, including West Lafayette, have done for the last couple of years. Why did it take until now for your officers to be carrying it?
For us, you know, the chief looked at it. We looked at response times with the ambulances, and it's so close with the ambulances, the police department in our community, that we didn't really feel that it was necessary at that particular time. And we'd prefer to have the ambulance personnel there at the same time because there's some reaction that people have. And, of course, and that's even growing because now, as you may have heard the other night, the normal dose now is not effective for a lot of people because the drugs are being cut with fentanyl, elephant tranquilizer. People have different types of reactions. And so I think it's important that, you know, medical personnel can be there. But with that number continuing to grow and the stress on the emergency services personnel, the ambulances, we went ahead and the fire department actually has it too. So we've made that step. We feel like we evaluated it appropriately. When it got to the time when it was critical, we went ahead and did it, and we'll be carrying it. But again, we've got to find programs to really try to help make people get into the treatment they need. And I know the legislator is going to continue to look at that. You probably heard the other night, too. We need to look at spice and the stuff they call synthetic marijuana. And, you know, it's a difficult problem, but we've got to get ahead of it.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. And we'll look forward to doing it again in 2018. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can catch our program next week at this same time with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and all these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.